The Wolfcast is a part of the Pulse Podcast Network.
Well, welcome to the Wolf Podcast. This is the very first episode, and I'm super excited to get started on this. Might as well get introductions out of the way. I am Matt Leith, along with my co-host here, Mitch Dibbing. Say hello,
buddy. Hey, kids.
So we decided to start this podcast because we are big Timberwolves fans, lifelong fans, and decided, you know, let's get into this. Some things you should be expecting with this show is game breakdowns, roster reviews, and I think, you know, everything that you could think of Timberwolves. Eventually we're going to get into fan questions. I think what you guys can expect as fans from us is we are going to take this very seriously and breaking down games, go through box scores, preview opponents, and look at upcoming free agency when that's around the corner. Right now, we got the trade deadline coming up, so we're going to visit that, talk a little bit about that. So let's hop right into it with the Grizzlies game.
January 30th Grizzlies game, not to be confused with the one that is the day after we're recording this on February 5th.
Yes, thank you. Yep, I forgot that they are playing the Grizzlies again on Tuesday. So looks like the first quarter here, it was 24-16. I remember watching and we kind of were taking it to them for a little while, and then it just seemed like, you know, the way that Marc Gasol and Mike Conley play, and, you know, he was on fire, Mike Conley, just the way that he facilitates the offense, moves the ball around, and can shoot the three is incredible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Mike Conley is one of the best point guards out there, that's for sure. But for Timberwolves, I thought the Timberwolves offensively looked great in the first quarter. Like, they were moving the ball really well. They're making great cuts, passing, distributing. And then second quarter came, and then we just played the Grizzlies game. We started slowing down. We played half-court basketball, which is what the Grizzlies want to do, and that's kind of why we lost it. We didn't lose the game, but we kind of lost a huge lead we had.
And you know what's absolutely killing us is Karl Towns getting into foul trouble. You know, you see somebody so talented that, you know, does so much for us. He picks up just so many dumb fouls. And
he played 26 minutes this game and in an overtime game. So you should be playing over 40 when you're Karl Anthony Towns. Jared Bayless played 43 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's not really acceptable, but he still does it.
Yeah. And the one thing about Towns, too, is it just seems like, I know that earlier in the season they had a little bit of a conversation, Ryan Saunders did, when he also had with the coaching staff, and they said, you know, we got to calm the foul trouble down, and he was good with it, but it's just like, you know, first quarter, do you really need that offensive rebound going over the back right now? Like, you just got to, sometimes you just got to let it go, and I know it's tough. But, you know, it's a ridiculous thing that just continues to happen with him. And it's just, you know, you got to tone that down a little bit and, you know, save your fouls for when it matters. If you're going to pick one up later in the game.
And he does a lot of, like, the same stupid offensive foul. Like, he'll always go down in the post and then try to turn around, but he'll hook him with his arm. That's when he always gets called for. Whenever he goes up for a layup, he'll try to, like, move the defender's arm with his offhand. That's another one that he keeps doing. I don't know how he learns that. That takes a lot of hand-eye coordination. And
yeah,
it's impressive, but also annoying. I don't know if he was practicing it, but he should stop practicing it.
100%. So we went into the half, and, you know, the one thing about the Memphis Grizzlies that I have always respected about them, no matter who was on their roster, just with the grindhouse, you know, that they have the nickname of, that you're just going to have to play and grind it out game against them. And I feel like that's going to keep building our young core up. But, you know, it's just tough to keep that pace. And people like Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, Kyle Anderson. I know watching Kyle Anderson on the Spurs, he just plays such a slow game and sometimes boring to watch. But he can get to the basket, and, you know, they just have such a unique roster to the point of where I know that they have been struggling in the West. I know that they're 20-32, but, you know, with the roster they have, they still are competing with some of the best teams, and, you know, it just being able to play against them and, you know, be able to beat them in such a close game and such a grind-out game, I feel like those are the games we played them back in the day where we would lose it in the second quarter, third quarter, because, you know, Marc Gasol would get hot, and know, Mike Conley would get going. And, you know, it just was nice to finally see us grind one out against them, win it in overtime, and an absolutely incredible putback shot by Towns.
Yeah, it's really nice to finally win a grind out game, like you said, but it shouldn't have been that close.
Right.
It was still overall just a bad game by the Timberwolves.
We led,
to be completely honest.
Oh, 100% agree. We led in the first quarter and the third quarter in scoring, and then they outscored us 28-20 in the second and 24-22 in the fourth. And, you know, I had to bring this to the table. I know we'll get into it when we talk about the Nuggets game, but I'm getting confused as of how in the world is Karl Towns on touching the ball later in the games as far as last kind of second situations. And I didn't think that the shot that Andrew Wiggins took was bad. I mean, it was a pull-up from, you know, about the top of the key.
I thought his shot was good.
Yeah, I don't think it was bad at all. I think he gets a bad rep because he takes those shots, but it's like he made, you know, he drove strong, pulled up, he created the space, he had a good look. It's not like he was forcing anything with it, but it just is sometimes to me it seems like why is when Andrew Wiggins is driving to the court, he's going from left to right. Why is Towns not on the other side setting that pick for him? I guess it just calls for whoever's going to be guarding him, because I'm sure Gasol was on him or Jared Jackson. But it just sometimes to me it just doesn't make sense why they're running the offense in the last seconds of the game away from him.
I don't know. I've noticed a lot in the NBA, like, big men don't get those last shots. Like, who are the big men that are taking their last shots? Like, really, like, right. Anthony Davis, has he really been, like, doing those big shots? I'm not that into the Pelicans, so I can't say, but usually it's always, like, the Hardens or the Damian Lillards or right. the Wings, and that's why I thought Wiggins should have had the ball in his hands. But one thing that we should address is, why was it in Jared Bayless's hand at the end of the fourth quarter?
Oh, my God.
I know he had a good game, but he didn't, like, have that good of a game. Like, where are the stats that I'm looking at right now? He shot 42%. He was 1-for-6 at 3-point, 8-for-19 on field goals. Like, that's okay. He simply got stats because he was in there long enough, which as a fourth-string point guard, he is playing tremendous, but I think he needs to remember that he is a fourth-string point guard for a reason on our team, and he should give it to the max contract guy.
Right, exactly. It makes me frustrated because it brings me back to, you know, when we had backup point guards get into the game for us, even when, you know, I feel like this has been a thing for years, and sometimes it's like they try to take the game over, and it's like, no, I don't need you to take the game over. I mean, it's great that he had 19 points and, you know, 12 assists, excuse me. Like you said,
yeah, nearly a triple double.
Yeah, he played a great game, but it's like, dude, you need to give that ball up sometimes. Like, you don't need to pull every shot you get from three. And, you know, he's not that old, but to play him 43 minutes too, it's like, it's tough. But, you know, he has really done a great job of stepping up, especially when, you know, we got Jones and Rose out and injuries and Jeff Teague. It's been kind of a stink crap year for us in the injury bug, when for guards at least. You know, I know we're really missing Covington, but, you know, the fact that we can go to our four-string point guard and he's performing pretty well, it's awesome. I just wish that he would tone down the scoring a little bit. It's like, you know, you should really be more of a pop kind of guy. When you kick it to Towns and he gets doubled, you're ready to pop out and shoot then. That's your thing.
Yeah, I feel like he's trying to take over Derrick Rose's role. He's trying to fill in Derrick Rose's, what he's been doing, when he shouldn't try to be Derrick Rose. He should try to be the fourth string point guard.
Right, exactly. So the final of that game was 99-97, and overall, again, I think that it was an awesome win. We needed that.
I think Cat needed that buzzer beater too. That was fun.
He did. Oh my gosh. What a week for him to hit that buzzer beater in the 24 hours, find out you're in the All-Star game.
And that video of him crying, like, what movie? I texted you this, but what movie theater doesn't have those leather seats anymore? Like, what crap? I think he can afford a better neighborhood.
I know.
Than that one.
You know, the AMC in the Eden Prairie Mall, they have their own bar. I don't know. He's got like $190 million in the bank. There's no way he can't be taking the staff out to nicer movie theaters.
Yeah, seriously.
But
or have his own movie theater.
Right, exactly. But I don't know if you saw, I actually happened to see this in the practice media scrum they do. I guess he said he lost a friend earlier that week, too, from high school.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and he opened up about how stressful it's been of a season so far for him mentally. I know that him and Mac Miller were close when he passed away. I see him post a lot of Instagram and whatnot. Sort of lose two friends. I mean, that's got to be tough. And he's been playing ever since the Jimmy Butler trade outstanding for us. And, you know, he deserves a lot of recognition. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about the All-Star game. I saw TNT just totally disrespect him and saying that, you know, they thought he was All-Star worthy, but, you know, they were going to take Rudy Gobert over him and other centers. And it's like, you know, no disrespect to Rudy Gobert because I think he's an outstanding player. He plays, you know, the role he's in for the Jazz is, you know, that's what he does. But you can't tell me that in a, you know, in a more important role that Karl Towns versus Rudy Gobert, you're going to take Rudy Gobert over Karl Towns.
Yeah, you can't. I feel like they wanted to take Rudy Gobert over Towns because Gobert is on a better team. Like, Gobert has contributed to more wins, but I don't think he made bigger contributions in those wins as Towns has been making in his games.
Exactly. It's almost like the DeAndre Jordan syndrome, but in a smaller scale, where DeAndre Jordan was such a good highlight dunker and a rebounder and a block shot. And, you know, he was always on ESPN. Rudy Gobert does that, but he's not exciting. He just gets it done and he just grinds it out. So I honestly did not think, and it's a bummer because I thought that Towns wasn't going to make it, but I thought he deserved to be there for the way he has been playing lately and just the whole year. I just thought that the national media and other coaches weren't going to see that and, yeah, pick, you know, maybe like a Rudy Gobert or LaMarcus Aldridge. I know LaMarcus Aldridge already made it, but I thought that maybe they'd pick somebody else and, you know, somebody like LaMarcus or somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge would end up making it over Towns in that last spot. So it's awesome that he got to make it. It's good that we have we'll continue to hopefully have an all-star on our team.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. At least one of them. That's what we need. So I'll transition here to the game on Saturday against Denver. And this one, Mitch, this one really bothered me because, you know, we can talk about the whole game, but I want to address the last play again. And I think what Ryan Saunders has done has been an incredible job to step up in such a short notice kind of role. He has the players rallying behind him. I even think that Andrew Wiggins is playing a lot better under him.
His rebounds have gone up per game. Like, he's definitely playing more aggressively Saunders.
Yeah, and I think I heard Jim Peterson say he's averaging like 7 rebounds a game under Ryan Saunders, which that's huge. And
he would average like -2 before. Like, he would hand it to the other team.
Yeah. He'd tip it to him and say, "Here you go, take that. I don't want that."
Typical Canadian, just, "Oh, did I take that from you? Sorry there."
They're almost just as bad as Minnesotans with their kindness. So last play of the game, and I went back and watched it and took notes on it. But so, you know, it's a bummer that we called the timeout right before we did. But, you know, you have to. There was a mad scramble for the ball. You got to gain that possession.
Yeah.
So 14 seconds left. If you think about it, and we're down 1 at that point in time.
Yeah.
You know, go for it. Go early because the worst thing that can happen is you miss, you foul, and then they shoot free throws. But if you go early enough in the clock, you'll guarantee yourself another shot. So what do we do? Jared Bayless dribbles it up to the top of the key, and watching it back a couple times, Dario went to go set the screen on the right side for Jared, but it looked like Towns was going to set the screen too at the same time. It looks like there was a miscommunication. So I don't know what Dario was doing setting that pick, but he set the pick, he attacked the basket, kicked it to the wall, dang, and this is the thing that frustrates me the most. Nikola Jokic was not taking away baseline. He was taking away the extra pass up top. He went and closed out, but Luol Deng had 4 seconds, could have drove past him. He had baseline wide open, and he could have attacked the lane for a layup, but pulled up for 3 instead. And I'm upset about the shot because it wasn't the best shot. I'm sure he was just kind of trying to get going. If he would have made it, it would have been like the factor of, oh, that's a bad shot, and then he makes it, and, oh, well, that's a good shot because you made it, even though it was a bad take. But I guess my thing is, when you're Ryan Saunders drawing up that play, how in the world are your two franchise players completely to the left of that play, and Jared Bayless has the ball in his hands when the game's on the line? And I know he played another great game, but it's kind of like what we talked about. He's, you know, it's him trying to do too much, and it's him getting ready to try to drive to the basket strong or maybe for a pull-up jumper. And this isn't just on Jared Bayless, because even when Thibodeau was here, Derrick Rose has the ball in his hands at the end of the games. And you know me, I love Derrick Rose, favorite player. But, you know, again, why are our two franchise guys not touching the ball in that scenario? Towns got 31. He had Mason Plumlee on him. Plumlee can't guard him. He got dunked on all night. Every time he got it to him down low, he was abusing him. Even Jokic, when Jokic was on him, he was scoring. So he's on fire. And again, I know that we're not talking too much about the big men shooting the ball, but even if you run that pick and roll, or he actually, Dario, picked and pop. If you run that pick and pop, you could have Towns coming to the high post, and then you could have an elbow jump shot, which he's pretty consistent at. Pump fake, maybe drive to the basket. But I think my three things were about the final play that upset me was Towns away against being on the complete weak side at the game-winning position. And then you had Jared Bayless with the ball in his hands at the end of the game, trying to create some offense and Lamelo Deng not driving baseline. And then three, just as Timberwolves as a whole with their end-of-game play design, I don't like that four on the baseline, one up, someone's going to come set a pick, and everybody knows it's coming. Like, I feel like you should just run a regular offensive set, try to create something within the offense versus, like, trying to force something up.
Yeah, I mean, you said earlier, like, you thought there was miscommunication, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I certainly hope so, because if the plan was to have Luol Deng shoot it, then I don't trust Ryan Saunders. I've loved what he's been doing, but if that was the plan, then no, thank you.
Tom Thibodeau left a little stain on the team of telling Ryan Saunders it's 2009 again. Luol Deng's an all-star. Derrick Rose an all-star. Just feed him the ball at all.
I mean, Luol Deng has been playing really well recently. Oh, like, yeah. He has stepped up. But, I mean, yeah, it just seemed like, again, Bayless trying to do too much. Which, it did seem like there's a breakdown, because there's no way that was the design play.
Right. And even you looked at Luol Deng, the minute he caught it, he chucked it up. And again, I know, 4 seconds left. He's probably just like, I don't even know if he was expecting the ball to come to
him. Oh, of course not. When you're Luol Deng, you don't expect the ball in the last second. I'm pretty sure that's why he shot it immediately, because he's freaking out. Like, why is this in my hands?
Yeah, he knows. And, you know, that's the best part. He knows.
Yeah.
But I will say, the one thing I loved about that Denver Nuggets game was coming into the game, I had actually got a chance to watch the game the night before when they played Houston Rockets. And Malik Beasley, man, he's been unbelievable. And I knew about him in Florida State, but I didn't really take, you know, too much notes on him. I didn't think he was, you know, somebody coming into the game. I know he had been kind of getting hot and playing well as of late. I didn't think he was going to be torching us. He had 31 against Houston, and I was like, okay, well, or I'm sorry, I think it was 35 actually against Houston. And I'm like, okay, well, there's no way he keeps it up. He has 22 against us, and it seemed like every three he launched, it was going in. And it was just like, are you kidding me? You know, he stepped up big, and then you know, Trey Lyles played big for them, 19 points. And the dumb thing was, I heard Jim Peterson mention it, Trey Lyles had not had good shooting nights. And then, of course, he plays the Timberwolves, and he cannot miss from three. They would just pick and pop, and he would just be out there pulling it. And it's like, you know, you put Gorgie Dang in that kind of a scenario, it's tough for him to defend that three. And then Will Barton, too. The fact that the Nuggets got Will Barton from Portland, such a steal for them. I think that, you know, Jim Peterson was loving him on the broadcast, and I couldn't agree more with the things he was saying. It just, you know, he is such a scrappy ball player, and the fact that, you know, for them to get 20 points from him, if he can keep playing like that, I know he just came off an injury, if they can keep that up from him, you know, sky's the limit for this Nuggets team.
Yeah, no, the Nuggets, you're talking about Malik Beasley and how he stepped up, but I think he's probably always had that ability to do that. It's just the Nuggets are so deep, they never needed him to do it. But now that they have injuries, like, these people can step up and show – their skills and their abilities, which is why I think they should make a move for Anthony Davis, because they have too much assets that they're just letting sit on the bench.
I agree. That's a good take that I have not heard yet, that they should make a move for Anthony Davis. I mean, could you imagine Jokic and Davis? That'd be an unbelievable. Terrifying.
And Murray?
Yeah. It would just be ridiculous. I mean, they are so deep. And then
let's not forget, they have Isaiah Thomas on the bench, and I'm blanking on his name, but the rookie that they just drafted.
Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, Michael Porter Jr., yeah.
He hasn't played a game yet.
No, but he could have gone first had he been healthy. That's what everyone was saying. His athletic ability was that great. He got injured in the first game of college, and he still got drafted the first round. So that's just a testament to how good this kid can be. So they even have depth on the injury reserved or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's incredible to watch what they have done and the team they have become, because, you know, look at last year. The game 82, when we need to make the playoffs and they need to make the playoffs, we end up beating them. I know Jimmy Butler played huge for us last year in that game, but you know, you look at the way that some of those players have stepped up. Nikola Jokic getting MVP considerations, and I don't think I think he deserves it. I think the way he has played and the way he's carried the team, he's deserved it. But just the fact of that wasn't what we were saying last year about him. It's just that you know, the way he continues to grow. I know it's not the Denver Nuggets podcast, but just giving respect to the, you know, I just giving respect to him and the way that the Timberwolves played against him. I mean, he had a triple double, but he had 13 points, and to limit him to 13 points is awesome. And that just speaks a testament of Taj Gibson. You know, the one thing about Taj Gibson that I always have this love-hate relationship about Taj is he doesn't help us stretch the floor much, but when we need him to play great defense, he always gets a stop.
Yeah, no, every time, I think it was both this Nuggets game and the last one to get us in the playoffs last year, there's always we need a big defensive stop. So I'm like, all right, we just need a contest it, get a big stop, and then all of a sudden Taj steals. I'm like, oh, I guess you could just take it. That's option I didn't know that was on the table. But yeah, you do you, Taji.
And he came up with a huge stop in the Denver game too. He dove on the ball and called the timeout.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I like half court.
And you know, the other thing too about Taj that's interesting to me is even in today's game where they want the fours to shoot the ball, he is somebody that continues to just take to the basket, and a lot of these guys can't stop him. And it's not like he's a spring chicken anymore. You know, he's out there bodying up dudes and taking it to them. And I think that's awesome that we have a guy that continues to grow and continues to, you know, shape his game the way he does.
Yeah, definitely. Which I guess is a good pivot to next topic of the trade deadline. We have all these assets like Taj and on an expiring contract, and even Rose. Do we try to trade him before the deadline to try to get some type of asset back to get a pick or something?
You know, I wouldn't put that out of the picture. I think that'd be a smart move for us. I think that would be something to look forwards. I know that you and I had actually been talking about it off air, which was I was of the mindset of trying to figure out a way to get Wesley Matthews here. And I think the only reason why I was thinking that was because I know that he was traded to the Knicks. And I know the Knicks are probably going to buy out his contract because they're trying to just save up as much money as they can to throw a max player their way. But I just think that he would be such an awesome asset to our team, where then we could maybe start to unload some of those, you know, maybe some of those contracts. Maybe, again, like you said, like a Rose and a Gibson, who I love the way they're playing for us. I think that they are awesome. But, you know, this is when you sell hot, when they're hottest at points.
Especially Rose, because he's making nothing. He's going to get paid next year.
Yeah, they got him for a veteran minimum. It's just, you know, the fact that we stole him for that. I mean, next year, if he's back, and, you know, I'd love him if he'd be back. But if he came back, we'd get him probably for a little bit more money and maybe a little bit of a discount. But if we could try to flip it for a couple picks or, you know, whatever we can do to clear up some space. Like I said, I know that I mentioned Wesley Matthews. I you know, after watching a couple of the games, I love Gorgie. I've been a big fan of Gorgie for a while. But if we could try to flip it and get another bench big from, you know, another team, I wouldn't mind maybe taking a look to see what we could get for Corey Day.
Yeah, and you kept bringing up Wes Matthews, and when you texted me that off air, I told you, like, let's just wait for the podcast. What I was going to say is we should try to trade Wiggins for him. I was, like, doing the ESPN trade machine, and to make it work, they might need to throw in someone else like Emmanuel Mudiay. But Wiggins' contract is killing us, and with Anthony Davis now demanding a trade because the Pelicans haven't been able to get anywhere since Anthony Davis have been drafted by them, I can see the same thing happening with Cat because we can't get that second guy to pair with him because we're paying Wiggins that money and he's not consistent enough. So I think we just need to get rid of that contract and try to – I don't know if the trade will give us a player that we can use, or it could just open us up to sign another person. Another thing I was thinking of was that I actually read about on A Wolf Among Wolves, a plug for that website, I guess. There's a free one. they talked about trading Wiggins for either Conley or Marc Gasol. Because the Grizzlies, they're trying to rebuild, and they can rebuild with Wiggins, I guess, if they haven't given up on him completely, like I have personally. But it would also work out perfectly because Wiggins is on a max contract that I don't think much people thinks he deserves. But if the Grizzlies get rid of Conley or Gasol like they're trying to do, they're not going to sign a max contract guy because it's Memphis. Nobody wants to go there. They're not going to sign. They're not going to trade and get a max contract guy. That's not likely. Their only hope of getting a guy worth getting a max contract is to draft him in this next draft. And once that rookie then gets – it's time for him to get an extension on his contract for a max contract, that's when Wiggins expires. So his contract isn't really holding them up, whereas for us it's really holding us back. So I think we should try to make a move with the Grizzlies or even the Pelicans now too with Anthony Davis on his way out.
If there is a way – and I hate to sound like Tom Thibodeau in the front office because – if there's a way we get Nikola Mirotic here, I know he's a former Bull, but he is somebody that I'm talking about with the stretch four and does it a little bit, I think, better than Dario. And I personally love Dario, and I don't want to trade him. I was happy when we got him.
Why do we have both? Why not both?
Yeah, exactly. Why not both? Because that just spreads the floor out so much. And I think they were also giving up Etuan Moore. Unfortunately, again, another Bull. We would just turn into the Timber Bulls. But Etuan Moore, a good 3-and-D guy, you know, I think that he would be able to give us a little bit of a lift off the bench too. And let me ask you this with your Memphis Grizzlies take is, would you throw in a first-round pick and for Mike Conley?
Wiggins and a first-round pick?
Yeah.
I would protect top five. Because if we miss the playoffs and we have the 13th best odds of getting the number one pick, which is not likely, and then somehow we get the number one pick and get Zion, like, I'd be pissed. So I think we at least got to protect top three or five. If that will entice them, which I was also looking at it at work today because I'm such a good employee. I was looking at the, contracts, and Mike Conley's is getting paid more than Wiggins, but he's obviously more deserving. But his contract expires when CJ McCollum does. And I think that would be a good guy to pair up with Cat.
CJ McCollum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And the nice thing would be to bring in a point guard like Mike Conley. And I think what Jeff Teague has done for us is awesome. But he's a mix of what Jeff Teague and Ricky Rubio do so well together. Ricky Rubio is an awesome passer and get into the lane and score. Jeff Teague is a great scorer.
He's a good scorer.
But Mike Conley brings it to another level. He's a great scorer and he's a willing passer. And with playing with somebody like Marc Gasol for all those years, he knows that, hey, I'm going to get mine, but it's important for the big man to get his too. And then, you know, he's in. I think the big thing with Mike Conley, in all his years, he's consistent. I know his injuries in the past have been kind of bummers, but he's always been consistent. And that's what we need, is some consistency at that point guard spot.
And it'd be nice to have someone that could have some better composure at the end of the games. have the ball in his hands instead of Bayless.
Exactly. I would feel about a million times better with Mike Conley in it, with the ball in his hands at the end of the game than pretty much any point guard on a roster. And I love all of them, but, you know, it's just talent.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're also going to introduce a brand new segment, obviously, the brand new show.
So everything is new here.
Everything is new. We call this the Love-Hate Relationship Talk, and we are going to dedicate this segment to JJ Barea. The little background behind it, as Mitch and I would always talk about the Timberwolves, and we'd always talk about how much that when JJ Barea would go off for the Timberwolves, we'd love him, and then when he would just have horrible games, we'd hate him. And so this
he would shoot 50 times a game, and some of the times it would go in all the time, and we would love him, and some of the times they weren't going in, but damn it if JJ didn't keep shooting.
He didn't know when to stop. He always had the greenest light in he was the Jamal Crawford before Jamal Crawford got here.
Oh, yeah, except Jamal Crawford is better.
Way better, 100 times better. So let's talk. So the way it'll work is we'll just talk about some things that maybe we loved during the week with the Wolves, some things that we hated during the week, whether it be a player, whether it be a moment, whether it be, you know, whatever it is. So Mitch, I'll start here. One thing that I love that the Wolves have been doing, speaking of Jamal Crawford, I've actually been thinking about this. The way Jared Bayless has played, I know we were talking a little bit about him and overstepping the boundaries, but eventually him coming off the bench, I think the spark that he gives is a Jamal Crawford-type spark, but as a better passer. I mean, the way he can knock down some of those shots and the way he drives and kicks, it's just he cannot be the primary point guard, but I love him off the bench.
Yeah, I like him off the bench, but I also like our other guards off the bench more.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing, finding him playing time with somebody like Tyus and Rose. You know, it's just those are our two guys off the bench, and Tyus has been so solid. It's tough to, you know, and what I hope that happens for Tyus Jones is he turns into what Jared Bayless is doing as far as the shooting. Because he's already got the passing down. If he can become a knockdown shooter, we could send Jared Bayless all the way back to Philly. But, you know, I just love the way he's shooting the ball as of late. He's been pretty hot since he's got here.
Yeah, he has been. I shouldn't say since he got here, but since he started playing. Because it took a while for him to start playing for us.
Yeah.
Like, once we got him, everyone's like, oh, yeah, we also got that guy. But these two. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of forgotten for a while. So it's actually kind of nice to see him step up to this responsibility and take it over. But that's your love is Jared Bayless. That's also my hate is how much he feels himself. He's like really, I mean, you can tell sometimes he starts feeling himself and he's not really looking to pass it. Mm-hmm. And I do overall, I'm very satisfied with Bayless and I think we should keep playing him. Well, we don't really have another option other than signing Isaiah Cannon again. But there's just some times where you could just tell he was wanting to take it over. Like, he's like, no, this is my shot. And also, his elbow kind of flares out a lot in his jump shots. I don't like it.
Yeah, you are, as long as I've known you, you've been the fundamental shooter.
If your elbow flares out, it's not a straight line, and that just ruins it. So
Yeah,
it is frustrating whenever I see, like, NBA players, and they have, like, a very clear problem with their shooting form, and I'm like, just let me tell you, fix it. Like, Wiggins never bends his knees on free throws. That's why a lot of his free throws are short. For Towns, it's a hop shot instead of a jump shot. But whatever, I digress.
It's funny. I actually just talked to one of my players about that today. They were curling around a shot, and it was a jump instead of a curl. It's like, no, you don't. You got to curl instead of jumping into your shot. It kills all your momentum. It doesn't work. And one of the other things I know that you absolutely hate, and the listeners are going to love this the minute I say it, how do you feel about big men picking and rolling the wrong way?
It's the worst. Like, how do you, it's a small thing. Just do it correctly. That's all.
It's not that hard. It really isn't.
Yeah, like if somebody tells you to do it correctly once, just remember that and continue to do it correctly. It's not hard, but like nobody does it. Every big man rolls the wrong way, and all of a sudden they get a ball passed to their back because they're not looking at the ball because they rolled the wrong way. There have been multiple turnovers that I've seen Cat have because he rolls the wrong way.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's something that's so easy that can be fixed. So I'll put in my hate for the week. There was like, it happened in the Denver game and it happened in the Grizzlies game. And it is the execution on actually what we're just talking about, the pick and roll. My thing that I'm getting frustrated with on the pick and roll is the Grizzlies switched on the pick and roll, pretty much just like every other team. So we had Gorgie, Taj, Towns, and Dario, all with small guys on them. I don't know if I'd have Dario post up. I'd rather have him pick and pop up to shoot threes and elbow jumpers. But you have Karl Anthony Towns, your $190 million man. And this is where I can see the hate for Jared Bayless coming in. And not just him, but whoever else played point guard. I know that Kanan got some extra play in there. But you pick and roll off that, and you have a point guard on your center, and you don't even look that way. That, to me, was the biggest hate. I just was so upset at the execution of that. It's like, you dribble that back out. You don't need to take Nikola Jokic to the basket when you have Malik Beasley on Karl Anthony Towns. Throw him the ball. Let him go to work.
Yeah, definitely. I don't even have much to add to that. I just agree wholeheartedly.
It turns into something that is just it's little plays like that that are killing us. There's 4 points you could have had right there. And then I know that going back to Denver game, I know I missed some free throws, but you know, there's 4 points and maybe even more. And then from that, after you set that pick and roll, and then they don't switch anymore, then they're just gonna change your whole defense up. Well, then you're gonna have way more open looks in other areas. So we'll see if they can execute that. But do you have a thing that you loved this week?
Just Cat. I love this buzzer beater, his all-star. And I see a lot of more aggression with him. Like, he has been fouling, getting in a lot of foul trouble recently, which has kept him out of the games. But when he comes back, he is aggressive and ready to go. And it's kind of an aggression that you didn't really see before when we had Tibbs and Butler. So it's nice to see him kind of stepping up to what he can really be. And his stats would be great if he played more than 10 minutes a game because of foul trouble.
Yeah. And ends up,
which, yeah, also I have noticed that when he gets in foul trouble, his second halves are pretty great because he's been sitting on the bench for a lot of the first half. So he's a lot more energized than the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. When you're sitting like that, you better come back ready to go.
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing that I love, I'm just going to go ahead and add this real quick when you're talking about Karl Towns. The one thing that I love is you don't see a lot of people, a lot of players, I guess, get emotional about All-Star games, because I feel like some of them just take it for granted. You know, there's no way that LeBron James isn't playing in an All-Star game until he retires. And I'm not saying that he doesn't feel like he is very honored to be there, because I'm sure there's part of him that does, but there's also part of those players that have done it so often that they're probably like, I wish I had a vacation now versus playing in an All-Star game, where somebody like a young guy like Towns, that's like he cried when he received that and his whole family celebrated. That, to me, just kind of, it just is amazing to see something like that where, you know, he has that love for the game. And
Gobert cried when he didn't get it.
Right. And that's like big on Rudy Gobert's part. And I shouldn't even get into this, but just with Draymond Green tweeting at Rudy Gobert after he didn't make it and was making fun of him for crying, it's like, you know, not everybody can get on a 73-win team, Draymond. Sorry about
that. Yeah, don't even get me started on Draymond. I hate that man.
Yeah, we're not gonna get going on him. So
too late. I'm going. Just kidding.
Yeah, I know. I should have never said his name.
He attacked my man Milky Chance's groin, Steven Adams, multiple times. He is on my hit list.
I would love to see another playoff round against them, and then Steven Adams can give him a nice bow on a post up on the block.
That'd be nice.
We'll make it even. So tomorrow, Tuesday, the February 5th, the Timberwolves will take on the Memphis Grizzlies at the Grindhouse in Memphis. It's 7:00 on FSN Plus. I think just the key to win is, you know, don't lull into Memphis' game. which is tough to say because they do such a great job at making you play their game. The way JB Bickerstaff does that is just incredible. So the only thing that I think that we need to do to get the win is just don't play Memphis's game. Push the pace on them. Attack, 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 and try to get those pick and switches. If you can get Cat switched on some of those other smaller forwards, just let him go to work. The one thing that he's really improved on his game is after he gets doubled, finding that extra pass. So he's going to get doubled. And I think this is a game where a guy like Anthony Tolliver can shine off the bench, being ready to spot up three. And I hope that Dario starts to find that stroke again, because I know he's been struggling. But, you know, I think this is a very winnable game, and this is a must-win game because, you know, we cannot keep – I've always said that if we linger around 500, we should – you know, we can make a push at the end. But if we keep falling a couple games under, it's looking tough for us.
Yeah, especially in this West. But, yeah, like you were saying, just – don't play their game, play our own game. And part of me thinks, part of me wonders if the reason we keep giving into Grizzlies and even other teams and playing their game instead of our own is because we keep getting different coaches and we don't really know what our game is. I wonder if that has any effect on it. If we had any stability, then we would have more of an identity of what our game is and what we can play. But until then, let's just not give in to their game.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I think that hopefully with Ryan Saunders stepping into that role, he'll continue to get better and he'll continue to establish that identity with the team. And, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, for sure by the start of next year, if he's still there, we'll be able to say, you know, the Wolves are a blank team, a run and gun team, or a slow it down type team like Memphis. So, yeah, I think it's a definitely winnable game. And you know, if we show up to play the way I know we can, and hopefully we'll get Rose back. Actually, you know what? I just read a report here that said he won't play Tuesday. So we're going to get a lot of Kanan and a lot of Bayless. So we'll see what happens.
We shall.
So, well, everyone that checked this out, thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. This is episode one, Mitch. How's it feel to be done with the first one?
It feels late.
It does feel late. It's 10:55 Minnesota time. Was it 9:55 over in Denver there?
That's how time zones work.
Yeah. I know. I'm good. It's getting past the bedtime here. So everybody, thank you so much for tuning in and listening, and expect more content for us. And I am Matt, and
I'm Mitch. I don't know if you were going to say my name, but it seemed like you paused, so
I jumped in. I was, yeah. And we're signing off.
Peace. Love you.